all for joining us today here on Elevate, broadcasting from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. This National Park College podcast highlights a different Nighthawk with each episode. We'll talk about their journey, challenges, key moments of success, their moments of elevation, leveling up, and overcoming. I'm Timothy Webb, your host, and I'd like to welcome Dr. Wade Durden to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
All right. So, Doctor, how long have you been at National Park College?
I started in 2011, fall of 2011, as the division chair for social sciences.
Social sciences. And now you're the vice president of...
Vice president for academic affairs.
Oh, okay. And what all does that entail?
I'm responsible for all the credit instruction on the campus. So any courses that college students are taking, not the non-credit nor the high school tech programs, but most of the college instruction. Also, adult basic education is a direct report to me, the library, any instructional technology information like the online services, D2L. Hmm. And so that's pretty much in a nutshell.
Okay. So I need to come to you and see if I got any hidden degrees hanging out there somewhere. Huh? Is that right?
Well, actually, you should probably go see the registrar and have them audit your transcript.
Yeah, I probably should track them down. I hope all the students heard that out there. The registrar audits transcripts, not Dr. Durden. Okay, what kind of challenges do you face as the vice president of academics?
I think the most difficult thing for someone in my role is just compliance. It's making sure that we're in compliance with accrediting agencies, with state law. It's kind of interesting. I may be, when you associate the vice president of academic affairs with instruction, but I actually don't have a lot to do with day-to-day instruction anymore. My main role is making sure that our policies and our activities in the classroom and related to instruction comply with federal rules and state rules.
Oh, wow. So on this podcast, Elevate, we talk about the different obstacles that a person had to overcome to where they get to. So what are some of the obstacles that you overcame to get to where you are today?
You know, it's really interesting, and I could probably talk about this a lot. My family was a typical Arkansas family, rural family. I'm the first person in my family to go to college and to get a... I should clarify, I don't think I'm actually the first to go to college, but I'm the first to finish college.
All right.
I'm certainly the only one that has a PhD, and I think I overcame a lot of obstacles that Arkansans would recognize. Poverty, my family was fairly poor. In fact, I think back about my high school days, and I'm not quite sure how I wound up in college. I was a smart kid, you know, in my classes in high school and such. And I think I just had a strong social network that recognized this kid has potential, and people kept pushing me in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I did go to Hendricks College, which, looking back on it, again, I'm not quite sure how I wound up there. There was a great recruiter named Diana Arms, and she came to the high school and talked to us. And I don't know. I just wound up, I did a visit because of her. I did two visits because of her, one in my junior year and one in my senior year. And I guess she just stayed on top of things and got me there. Because I really didn't know how to apply for college or how to do any of that stuff. And so she helped open that door for me. I still had to figure out those first couple of years how to be a college student. If some of my college buddies, in fact, and I were talking just yesterday, and they were laughing at me and where I am now professionally, because they knew me my freshman year of college. I didn't know what I was doing. I'm lucky to survive my freshman year of college. I got a D in math my freshman year of college. It was the only math course I took, and I basically just barely held on to a D by a thread, maybe a generosity of a faculty member, in fact. And so And mostly it wasn't because I wasn't capable, it was because I didn't know how to navigate college.
Yeah.
I came back from my freshman year of college and I told my dad I wasn't going back.
Wow.
I said, I'm not going back. I'm just gonna find a job. And he said, well, so happens that I have a job for you. And he ran construction crews that it was a particular type. They poured on-site manholes. Mm-hmm. So it was concrete work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to work for him. I worked on a crew that summer. And I actually almost died in Hot Springs. I was almost killed on a job site. What? Where Lowe's used to be on Central over mm-hmm. by the older Kroger over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost got killed on that job site. And I worked hard that summer. I did well. I mean, he gave me a choice at the end of the summer. We met, the whole crew met every afternoon. We all came back. All yeah. the different crews came back. And we sort of talked about what we did that day and what needed to happen the next day and such. Mm-hmm. And Dad asked me in that crew meeting, he's like, well, it's time to make your decision. Are you going back or are you staying?
Mm.
And I said, I think I'm going to go back. And every guy there started to applaud and they patted me on the back.
Yeah,
and they said, you know, we'd be happy to keep you, but we're glad you're going back.
Wow.
And so I tried to do better after that. Mm-hmm. I still struggled my sophomore year, but by my junior year, I kind of hit my stride.
Yeah, so students listening, it does take time to get used to college life and college structure, even for the vice president of academic affairs. But, Doc,
you got to give us a little more details. What happened on that job site that day?
Oh, gosh. Well, and so you know how when you're building a building on a slope, you have to sort of landfill it in, you know, mm-hmm. to flatten it mm-hmm. out and bring dirt in. Okay. And so where that job site is, there was a huge slope, and we were pouring the manhole before it was landfilled
mm-hmm.
in. And so the manhole that we were pouring was 40 feet high.
Mm-hmm.
And a manhole, you've seen them probably, you know, they're about, what is that, about 3 foot in diameter or so. And the forms, you have an interior form and an exterior form, and you pour the concrete in between, right?
Yeah.
And so we're 40 feet up, and the OSHA rules must have been a little bit more lax. I wasn't strapped in anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, there were
yeah.
no, this was 1992.
Yeah.
There were no straps or anything. And mm-hmm. so I'm standing on what is ultimately the lips of these forms, which are about 2 inch wide each. And so I've got my feet over about a 6 inch lip here, just standing on the top of a 40 foot
wow.
tower of plastic forms that are bolted together
mm.
and a concrete crane mm-hmm. with a bucket of concrete is swinging that bucket out to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're putting the concrete between the forms
mm.
and then it would take and fill it back up while we got the air pockets and things out of the concrete.
Mm.
And so at one point, they didn't notify us that the bucket was coming back.
Mm.
And I had my back to it because I was trying to do some work with getting air out of the concrete that we just poured. And my foreman happened to look up and see it coming and said, drop. And he literally dropped to the side and was hanging on the side of the forms.
Oh my God.
And I turned around just in time to see the bucket
and
caught it. It swung me out off the... If I hadn't turned around at that moment, it would hit me in the head and I would have fell 40 feet into what is basically, you know, a construction site. There were rebar and all sorts of stuff down there.
Oh, my
gosh.
Wow.
It was close.
I can't imagine why you went back to college after that. Well, so I guess you're not scared of heights then.
No, I used to rock climb, in fact.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I've gotten more afraid of heights.
Have you?
And as I've gotten older, I guess your inner ear changes a little bit as you get older.
Maybe
so.
I am afraid of heights. But I found that if I faced them more often, that fear would go away.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't face them that often because I'm afraid.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't mind high places. What I found when I was rock climbing is that I'm more afraid of the edge.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's it. So is there, that all being said, those are a lot of obstacles you had to overcome. Now that you've been in your position for a little while, is there any achievements you're proud of or most proud of?
You know, this may sound cliche, but I think the best thing that I have done here is the team that I've built in academic affairs. I've got very competent, hardworking people on my team. If I got hit by a bus tomorrow, any one of them could lead this college.
Mm.
You know, I'm very confident in them. They're experts in their understanding of the college. They're experts in their disciplines and their specific areas. But they're top notch. And I think the students benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that kind of expertise and competence trickles down into the faculty,
yeah.
Right? The faculty see that. And that they know that we have their back, and they know that they're supported. And at least I hope they know that, because I feel that way. And I think that allows them to be more at ease in the classroom,
mm-hmm.
and to focus on their students, because they don't have to worry about the other things. I yeah. try to keep a lot of things out off the faculty's shoulders.
Right,
if I can.
Sure. Because teachers, they have a lot
on
the plate
yeah.
already.
Oh, yeah.
It's too, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a classroom instructor for many, many years, so it's not easy work.
Right. No, it's not. And they work a lot of extra hours to get right. it all done.
For local content like this and much more, subscribe to the Sentinel Record by visiting hotsr.com and clicking subscribe.
So, you may have already said this, I'm not sure, but what brought you to NPC? What do you like about being at National Park College?
I started my career at what was then Pulaski Tech in North Little Rock. It's now UA Pulaski Technical College, as a faculty member. And while I actually worked on my PhD while I was there, and while I was working on my PhD, I had the fortune of doing an internship, a legislative internship with Arkansas Association of Two-Year Colleges, which has now been rebranded and is just called Arkansas Community Colleges.
Hmm.
And the director took me under his wing, and I was a legislative intern, which meant during the 2009 legislative session, which is when we created the lottery scholarship in the state.
Oh, wow.
So it was a big session.
Yeah.
And I was doing research on lottery scholarships anyway.
Mm.
And so I got, one of my jobs was to track all the legislation that affected community colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are computer programs to do this, but I was that program. Every day I knew exactly, I sat down, I had a list of every single bill that affected community colleges, even if it was something like an energy efficiency thing for streetlights that would have an impact on us. Mm-hmm. I knew it. I had a summary of what the bill did
mm-hmm.
or would do, and I had sort of a calendar of where it was in the process, what committee it was going heading for, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I was also responsible for creating talking points, because on any given day, there might be a committee meeting that would come up that would have that we would need to speak to a particular bill.
Mm-hmm.
But AATYC didn't speak to bills, but we always had a president with us every day during the legislative session, a different president.
Mm-hmm.
And my job was to coach them. Here's what's going. Here's the bill.
Right.
Here are your talking points. If we're called to give testimony, this is all you need to say.
Right.
You know, and that's what I did. I sat beside the president in any given committee
yeah.
meeting, and I got to know Sally Carter, who's a former president here.
Right. Right.
By that, and so when I saw the job for social science division chair come open, it just sort of happened that my wife and I were both looking for something different anyway. It was mm-hmm. time. I just finished my PhD. I was kind of just looking to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't really anywhere to progress at Pulaski Tech. So it just, you know.
Yeah.
It was close enough that I could commute. We've since moved here, but at the time I commuted for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I applied and got the job.
Yeah.
And so
that's
just
great.
Kind of worked
so
out.
So you got to know President Carter. She was the president when I was a student here at National Park College.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have fond memories.
Yeah, I still keep in touch with her. I talked to her this week. Yeah.
Good deal. Okay, Dr. Durden, what hobbies, what interests do you have that you enjoy outside of the college and your work?
Well, I am a musician. I don't really advertise that a whole bunch, but I do play music, not as much as I used to, but I do have a band, and we just released an album, and, you know, as albums go, people still release albums, at least us older musicians do. Apparently singles and things like that are the new thing, but I still believe in the art of putting together an album that's cohesive and that feeds where the songs lend themselves to one another, and there's sort of a... I still love the tangible feel of an album, and to pick one up and to look at the artwork and to see who played on it and to see who produced it and just to, you know, the connections. Oh, this person was on this album and played. You know, I just love that stuff. So
that's awesome.
So music is probably my primary hobby.
What instruments do you play?
What
role do you play in your band?
I'm the lead singer. I write songs. I have a partner in that band. We write songs together. I've been writing songs for 20 years and playing in bands for 20 years. And I play guitar mainly. That's my main instrument. Long ago, I tried my hand at being a lead guitar player, but I wasn't very good one. I was functional.
Hmm.
I could get in there.
Yeah.
But I wasn't great, you know, and I knew I wasn't great.
Hmm.
And so after that band split up and I no longer had that role, I became the front man of a band, which I never thought I would do. I always was sort of a backup singer and playing guitar, but
yeah,
I have since always fronted the band. So I just play rhythm guitar. And then I have a banjo.
Yeah.
I used to play banjo. I haven't picked that thing up in about 4 years probably. I was never... great. I broke my wrist when I was 17, and I can't go fast.
Yeah. Well, if any of our listeners have ever picked up a banjo, they'll know they're heavy and understand why you haven't picked it up in a while.
Yeah, yeah. I love that thing, though. And I swear, when I retire, I'm gonna learn how to play, like, old ragtime jazz on it and find a tuba player and sit on the corner and play ragtime jazz with a tuba player, and that's going to be my thing.
You do that, I'm coming to watch. So is it a five string?
It is a five string.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing we do share, is we both are musicians. What is it that brought you to guitar? What do you like about guitar so much?
You know, I really don't know. Nobody in my family plays music.
Hmm.
I do remember going to church when I was little with my grandparents, and I have memory of him playing with a band, and I don't think he played it. He certainly didn't own a guitar, but maybe he did. I have this sort of vague sort of childhood memory of him up there in the church band. Maybe he was just singing. But somewhere along the way, I wanted a guitar, and someone got me one. And I had a guitar since I was little. And then when I was in high school, I started taking lessons. But you know how kids are. I was about 14 or 15, and I was taking lessons. And there were these two brothers who were taking lessons with me who I knew. And I kept up with it for a while. They had a band. They probably still do in the area. That was pretty popular. But they were fantastic. They came from a family of musicians.
Yeah.
And I could not keep up with them. Yeah. And it was like all three of us taking lessons at the same time, and I got frustrated and I quit. And then when I was about 20, I was in college, I still had a guitar, and I knew a few chords.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could play an Eagles song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty tough, really. Well, Eagles songs are pretty tough.
Some of them are, that's true. But when I was 20, I worked at a gas station. My mom and dad owned a gas station for a while, and I worked at it periodically, and a guy came in and he taught lessons at Stonehenge Guitar on it wasn't Keel Avenue, it was that Highway 107 up there, JFK or whatever it is in North Little Rock.
Mm.
And we started talking, and he invited me to come take lessons, so I took lessons with him. Before long, I was teaching lessons
for him.
And so I didn't really start playing guitar until I was in my 20s.
Yeah. Similar here, I didn't start really playing until I was 18, but I did have one as a small kid.
Mm-hmm.
But as the stories go, I broke it.
Uh-huh.
How punk rock of me.
Yeah, well, I wasn't very punk rock. I think, in fact, as a kid, I might have carved Andy Gibb's name into my into my guitar. And I know most of the people who listen to this are going to go, "Who's Andy Gibb?"
Yeah, I remember.
Well, if you know who the Bee Gees are, Andy Gibb was their little brother. So
was there any particular guitar player other than the man in church or Andy Gibbs that that got you fired up about it? Because for me, it was Kurt Cobain. For whatever reason, when I was a teenager, Cobain showed everybody you can write great songs that are simple.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really inspired me.
I think, when I first started learning to play guitar, I played Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
I mean, and partly that was because my teacher too, but like Jimi Hendrix and Dire Straits, stuff like that. I mean, that's one of the reasons I was initially a lead guitar player, because I technically was pretty proficient for a while.
Yeah.
And I could play just about anything Jimi Hendrix played. I couldn't even dare go there anymore. I've forgotten that human that used to do that has gone away, you know? I mean, maybe with some practice. I don't think about guitar the same way anymore. Now I think about it as a rhythm thing for lyrics.
Yeah, yeah, accompaniment to your words.
Yeah. But in terms of like songwriting, I'd say Tom Petty is my biggest influence.
Well,
again, but it's the same thing that you said about Kurt Cobain.
Yeah.
You write good songs that aren't hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, his songs typically are four chords. Sometimes the same four chords the whole song, and you don't even realize that the rhythm has never really changed.
Right.
You know?
It's hard for a songwriter to realize that it's about the words, especially when we're guitar players at heart, you know? And so that's definitely something I've had to tell myself over the years. Well, that's cool. You just named some of my favorite artists, Tom Petty, Hendrix, Dire Straits. Dire Straits, I love.
Yeah, Martin Offler is an amazing guitar player.
Oh, my gosh. What's the future hold for you, Doctor? What do you plan to do?
Well, I don't know. I'm just sort of doing my thing. I am a finalist at University of Arkansas Pulaski Technical College for their chancellor position. That was just announced yesterday. And so we'll see if something happens there. But if not, that's okay too. I'm very happy here. I'm not actually in a hurry to leave.
Yeah.
But sometimes opportunities present themselves and you sort of have to take a look.
Well, we don't want to lose you, that's for sure. And
this school's been great to me.
We hate to root against you on that.
Totally. I get it. I have a whole staff, I think, that's saying prayers. We love Wade. We want what's best for him, but we really want him to stay.
Is there any questions you wish I'd have asked you that I didn't?
You know, I don't think so. I think one thing, though, that I would add, because at least the faculty have heard me say it a lot, and I think it deserves some thought, is I tell, I always end meetings, especially our faculty meetings, with the phrase, go out and be the college. Go out to be the college.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's important about that, and what I mean by that is, this college, we tend to think, oh, we're at National Park College. College is more than the buildings. It's more than projectors and whiteboards. We can have a college anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The college is the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I say that because I don't want people to forget that. The college is the people. We're all, you are the college.
Right.
I'm the college. Our faculty are the college. And so we have a responsibility to remember that and be the college.
Yeah, that's good. That wraps up Elevate. Dr. Durden, thanks for joining me today. You were our first guest, and it's been wonderful talking to you.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
And thanks to all of you for listening to Elevate today from the Razorback Camper Sales Studio. New episodes are released each Thursday. Special thanks to National Park College and the Sentinel Record for making this podcast possible. Until next time, this is Timothy Webb reminding you that every day is a chance to elevate.